My guest is a human rights activist, former NBA player, and Nobel Peace Prize nominee who lost his NBA career for speaking out against human rights violations in China, at least according to him. His new book is called In the Name of Freedom, A Political Dissident's Fight for Human Rights in the NBA and Around the World. Please welcome to the show the one and only Enes Cancer Freedom. Enes, how are you, man? Long time no see. How have you been?
Thank you for having me, brother. Thank you so much.
Man, the pleasure is all mine. You know, for people who are unfamiliar with your story, you're from Turkey. Mm-hmm. You know, what were your feelings about America while growing up? Tell us mm-hmm. about that, first of all.
So when I was growing up, it was a very interesting childhood, actually. And I remember, you know, I was... if you're Middle East and if you're a politician, if you want to be elected again, you do a couple things. You attack America, you attack the West, you attack Christian people, and you attack Jewish people. Mm. And every politician uses that to be reelected again because, unfortunately, the base is so uneducated. So I remember I was 9 years old. I was, playing with my friends. And I remember my friends who are not even teenagers, they were burning American flags. They were breaking crosses. And I remember I asked one of them, like, guys, what are you doing? They said, well, we should hate America. We should hate Christian people. They're evil. They're devil people. They give me a flag to burn it. They give me a flag. They give me a lighter. And they said, burn it. I looked down. I was like, this is not a right thing to do. And I remember I ran upstairs to my mom. I was like, Mom, my friends are telling me to hate America, hate Christian people, hate Jewish people. What do I do? My mom said, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but do not hate anyone before you meet him. So that day, I give a promise to my mom. Mom, promise that I'm not going to hate anyone before I meet him. And the environment that I was growing up in was getting so toxic. When I was 17 years old, my dad said, enough is enough. You're going to America, and you're going to get your education and play basketball at the same time. I even remember asking my dad, do you really want me to go to Devil's Nest? My dad didn't say anything. Only thing he said was, go and see it yourself. So that's how I viewed America, Christians, and Jewish people when I was growing up back in Turkey.
And then you ultimately made a trip to the United States that mm-hmm. essentially changed a lot of things for you. First of all, when was this trip to the United States, meaning which year was it, and what exactly happened that made you sort of change your thinking?
Well, back in 2009, it was the first time I came to America for high school. And I remember after the practice, I was sitting down with my teammates, and I got up. I was about to leave, and two of my teammates were Christians. They were like, listen, man, we know that you're Muslim, and you just got to America. If you want, we can go get some halal food and take you to a mosque. I remember I turned around and left the locker room because I just didn't know what they were trying to do. And then I remember the promise that I gave to my mom. It came back. I was like, what do I have to lose? Let's go. They were so respectful. We went to a mosque. We prayed. And then after that, they took me to go get some halal food. And I remember that two of my teammates was the first time that put a little question mark in my head. And I started to question everything that I've been, taught for the last 17 years back home. Because this doesn't happen in Turkey, but many of the countries in Middle East, in schools, formal classes, you have an American flag. And if you don't step on those flags, you're not even allowed to attend the class. And you will get bullied the rest of the school year by your classmates and your teacher. So I grew up in an area like that. And think about that two of my teammates, which I'm still thankful till this day, because they were the first time that put a little question mark in my head. And I started to question everything.
Mm. Enes Cancer, when you said, I want to make sure I write, you said you were in Turkey, and if you didn't step on the American flag, they essentially, would frown upon that and essentially punish you in their own way because you didn't step on the American flag and you didn't engage in that kind of disrespectful behavior?
Exactly. I mean, because in back in Middle East, you think that you're doing something that is so brave, because you don't know that is a wrong thing to do. So unfortunately, because of the propaganda and media and many of the media that's controlled by the dictatorships over there, I mean, that's what you believe. And so that was the case. And, you know, what breaks my heart is there are millions of kids in the Middle East growing up anti-Semitic, anti-West, anti-American, anti-Christian, just because of those hate speeches in rallies coming out of those, you know, politicians' mouth. And when I met them, met my, you know, friends in America for the first time, I was like, I want to dedicate myself and I wanted to like change that mindset and inspire the next generation in the Middle East.
11-year NBA veteran Enos Cantor Freedom right here with your boy Stephen A. I'm wondering about it because I know you went to the University of Kentucky, even though you did not play. You went there. You end up getting drafted in 2011. And for those out there that are not educated, you ain't some second round pick. You're not someone who drafted an individual. You were picked third overall in the NBA draft, in the same draft that Kyrie Irving went number one, that Kawhi Leonard went number 15, that Kemba Walker and others got drafted. And that's who I'm talking to right now. I guess what I'm asking is that with all of the experiences that you've gone through, certainly starting your, you know, playing your career for 11 years, you played for the Utah Jazz, Oklahoma City Thunder, New York Knicks, Portland Trailblazers, and of course the Boston Celtics. You were an athlete on the highest level, meaning the number one basketball league in the world, yet all of this stuff was going on in your mind and in your heart. How was the experience for you being an NBA player, seeing how conscientious you were about so many things? What was that experience like for you being an NBA player in the National Basketball Association?
Oh, my God. I mean, so I don't know how much you know, but I couldn't play high school as well.
Right.
So couldn't play high school, couldn't play college. And then I got drafted in 2011 and there was a lockout happened. So I literally couldn't play 3 years in a row. And after the lockout ended, I mean, I think getting drafted by Utah Jazz for me was a blessing. I understand it's like it's a small market, but I think, you know, just being in Utah with Mormons, I feel like there was no outside distraction. You know, I was focusing on basketball. Everything was shut down at like 8, 9 p.m. And I had a great mentor. It was all Jefferson and Paul Millsap. And I got to play with Derek Favors. And it was an amazing culture. So I was very blessed. I played 3.5 years. Then I got, you know, traded to Oklahoma. That's when I'm like, you know what? I love basketball now. I enjoy it. Because once you start playing, you know, basketball with some of the superstars out there, like, you know, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and many other ones. And obviously an organization like Oklahoma, that's when I really started to enjoy basketball. And then after that, I got, you know, traded to, you know, New York Knicks with Melo. I think that was, again, that was a huge blessing because obviously you're now playing in front of the, you know, the millions of fans and, you know, celebrities everywhere, and obviously the, you know, that you can never beat. It's amazing because like every time you step in the garden, it's like there's nothing like it. So I was blessed, definitely. When I look back at my throughout my career, I was definitely blessed.
Now, it's one thing to be a conscientious observer. It's another thing to ultimately be seen as an activist, particularly one against human rights violations. When did that take fold in the life of Enos Cantor Freedom?
Back in 2013, there was a huge corruption scandal happening in Turkey. President Erdogan and his family members were involved in it. And after that, you know, he started to go around and putting innocent people in jail because he was putting, you know, journalists in jail. He was shutting down media outlets. And I was like, I don't care who you are, but if you're fighting against a free media, I'm going to say something. So I literally put a tweet out there, and because of the NBA platform, it became a huge conversation. And I was like, from now on, I'm gonna just start to pay attention about what's going on in my country more and more. So I started to speak up, and the Turkish government didn't really like it. You know, they sent so many warnings to me, to my family. I mean, my dad was one of the biggest scientists in Turkey, and he got fired from his job. My sister went to medical school for 6 years, and she still cannot find a job. I think the saddest one was my little brother because he wanted to be like his big brother, play basketball in NBA. But because of the same last name, he was getting kicked out of every team. So they were getting affected so much, they had to put a statement out there and said, we are disowning Enes. And after that, Turkish government didn't believe that. And they sent police to my house in Turkey and they raided the whole house and they took every electronics away. Phones, computers, laptops, iPads, because they wanted to see if I am still in contact with my family or not. They couldn't find no evidence, but they still took my dad in jail for a while. But luckily, we put so much pressure from, you know, America with politicians, with media to Turkey, they had to let him go. And then after that, that's when, you know, things got really ugly. You know, they revoked my passport. They put my name on Interpol list. And back in 2022, I had an honor to meet with the Pope. And obviously became viral. Literally the next day, they put a bounty on my head. And we had a conversation with the FBI. They said, you have to, you know, come to America immediately because that's going to get you in big trouble. So it sucks because, like, people need to understand throughout my whole life, I've never talked about politics. Everything that I talk about was actually about human rights. So that's why I'm proud of what I did.
And I guess what I'm asking is that, you know, what riled them up? What is there something specific that you said about a specific person, whether it was, you know, it was Erdogan or whomever leading Turkey? Was there something that you said? Was there a specific person that you targeted? What was it that got them so riled up that they had to go after your family the way that you said they did?
Well, there are so many, you know, human rights violations and political prisoners in Turkey. So right now, you can literally just check up on internet and find out everything. There are thousands of innocent people are in jail waiting for help.
Of course.
So many innocent women and actually kids. So I actually started call him out when he was using his power to abuse so many things, like Interpol system. So right now, I am only allowed to travel to 29 countries in the world. If I go to any other countries, then I am in trouble because they will extradite me back to Turkey. I started to talk about his human rights violations and how, you know, his war against his journalists who write against them and stuff. But I think things got really ugly when they find out that he was sending truckloads of weapons to so many terrorist groups out there. And actually, this is on internet. You can easily find out.
Sure.
I started to talk about that, and things got really ugly then, and they really hated that because they pretty much got exposed.
So, but you did it knowing they were willing to come after your family. By this time, you know this, right? What did your family tell you? And what were your concerns? I mean, did you ever find yourself feeling like, I might need to be quiet because it might get my father harmed, it might get my sister harmed, et cetera?
You know, a lot of people are asking me that question, actually. Do I regret anything? Or if I knew that, you know, it's been 11 years, I haven't seen my family, is it worth it? I mean, people need to understand, like, you know, I understand my family is one and everybody knows my story, but there are thousands of families out there and their situation is way worse than mine. I was like, you know, I feel like this platform is given me by God and I got to do God's work to just be the voice of all those innocent people out there who don't have a voice. So that's why, I mean, I understand. I mean, my family had to go through a lot. I think that's the toughest thing, fighting against a dictatorship, what your family has to go through. But I know deep down that my mom and my dad proud because I am talking something bigger than myself. I'm bigger than basketball.
I totally understand that, but you're still a son that loves his parents. Mm. And so I would imagine that there have been times where you were concerned about their well-being. Did they say anything to you to encourage you to stop? Did they tell you to keep going, keep on doing what you're doing? What did they tell you?
You know, they said, if you're standing up for something that is not political, keep going. But if you have anything to do with politics, we're not going to support you. He said, if you're going to talk about the human rights violations, if you're going to talk about the political prisoners, we have your back 100%. As soon as you say anything about the political system, in Turkey and start picking sides, we're not going to support you, because human rights is the only message that is going to bring people together in our country and anywhere else. So we will support you until you talk about politics.
How did you feel about it when they said that to you? And is that a focus that you have zeroed in an effort to still be true to yourself, be your true, authentic self, obviously brave, by the way, as well? Or do you find yourself conflicted because you want to say more than what you really say, but they've let you know their position and how they would not support you?
I mean, of course, I do want to say more, because Turkey is not, I mean, Turkey is a very important ally. It's a NATO ally, second strongest military, and it's a very important ally for America and the West. But I mean, also, Turkey is not going to become democratic again until Erdogan is out of power. So, I mean, 99%, I mean, I can't even remember. I have never in my life, even with Turkey, they never said, let's vote for this guy, or let's pick this party over that party, because that means that I'm going to lose one side. You know, I think my message is very pure, because I believe human rights is above politics. I mean, I don't care if you are far right, far left, whoever you are, whoever you cheer for, you have to care about human rights. So, of course, I do want to say more, but because of the promise that I give it to them, I'm not going to ever get into politics in Turkey.
So your last season in the NBA was the 2021-2022 season as a Boston Celtic. You played one game that year, and obviously you were outspoken at that particular moment in time as well. Turkey, like you said, is an ally. Obviously, they're very, very important when you consider what's going on in that region of the world. One would think that since you're talking primarily about human rights, that wouldn't be problematic. Yet you've been on the record stating you believe that your positions about human rights and your willingness to be outspoken about it has a lot to do with the fact that you are no longer a player in the NBA. And I'd like to remind everybody right now, if I remember correctly, you are standing here right now, sitting here right now. You're 33 years old. You ain't 43. You're 33 years old, and I see plenty of teams in the NBA that can use a big man. So you're 33 years of age, and you're not in the National Basketball Association. What, if anything, do you believe all of this has to do with you no longer wearing an NBA uniform?
I was doing a basketball camp with the Congressman Hakeem Jeffries in his district. It was an amazing basketball camp. And after the basketball camp, all the families lined up and they were taking pictures one by one. And I remember I took a picture with this kid, and his parents called me out in front of everybody. He said, "How can you call yourself a human rights activist when your Muslim brothers and sisters are getting tortured every day in concentration camp in China?" That's when I realized that, you know, I understand my plate is full, but I got to be bigger than just Turkey. That day, I went to my hotel and started to study about what's going on in China. And I realized that, you know, the Tibetans, Hong Kongers, Taiwanese people, and, you know, Uyghurs are in big trouble, and they've been getting abused by the Chinese government. And back in 2019, I don't know how much you want to talk about this, but when Daryl Morey tweeted "Stand with Hong Kong," I was playing for Boston Celtics again. Mm-hmm. I remember the assistant general manager walked in and said, "Guys, things about to get ugly. Do not say anything about it." And Brad Stevens stopped them, and he said, No. We are in America. You all can say whatever you want to say, but be ready for the consequences." Mm-hmm. And back then, I didn't really understand what was going on. And then after that, after I realized, I was like, this is bigger than, you know, basketball. I was like, I'm going to talk about it. So I was playing for Boston Celtics. Our first game was against New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden. It was literally all over, nationally televised. So back in 2020, during COVID, I remember all my teammates, which I support, they were putting on their shoes, you know, Black Lives Matter, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, I can't breathe. And I was like, if they are allowed to do that, I am allowed to put on my shoes, "Free Tibet, Stand with Hong Kong, Free the Uyghurs," right? And then after that, I wore this game. 2 minutes before the game started, we were in a team huddle. two gentlemen from the NBA. They were from the Boston Celtics. You can't even tell you who you are, who they are, because Celtics keep denying it. They were the equipment managers. They said, "We're getting so much pressure from the NBA. You got to take your shoes off." I was like, "Am I breaking any rules?" They said, "No, but we are getting so much pressure." I was like, "Go tell your boss. I don't care who it is. I'm not going to take him off." They said, "Buddy, we're not talking about getting fined or whoever. We're talking about getting banned." So obviously, I didn't take my shoes off. That game, in a halftime, I went back to my locker room. My manager texted me and said, "Every Celtics game is banned in China." It took them 24 minutes to take out every Celtics game, ban every Celtics game on television. After the game, I had a conversation with the NBPA, the Player Association, which I pay thousands of dollars every month to protect my rights against the NBA. Mm-hmm. They said, "We're getting so much pressure from the NBA, you cannot wear them ever again." Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, I had a conversation with my agent. He said, "Well, I'm going to be honest with you, because I work for you, I don't work for the NBA. If you say another word about China and Nike, you forget about, you know, losing your career only. You're going to lose millions of dollars. You're 29 years old. You can't play another 6 years. That means that's like, what, 20, 30, $40 million. If you're ready for it, go ahead." I hang up the phone and never talk to them again.
Edis, do you look back on that and have any regrets?
So I played my last game against the Brooklyn Nets. And after the game, all of my teammates were giving me hugs in the locker room. And I was confused. I was confused because I asked many of them. I was like, "I thought we have freedom of speech in this country." They said, "Buddy, this was your last game. You're not going to play basketball ever again on this court. They're either going to release you or they're going to just trade you."
Who said this to you?
I mean, I don't want to give any names. I don't want to choose anyone, but it was, I mean, I had so many conversations with you.
But I'm saying it was other players, it was coaches, that's all I meant by that.
I have nothing to lose at this point. It was Jaylen Brown. I had many conversations with Taco Fall. I even have a conversation with many of my assistant coaches. They were secretly supported me, but unfortunately, they couldn't really say it out loud. And then after that, I was like, "Well, I guess let's wait and see what happens." And then after that, you know, that literally 10 minutes before the trade deadline, they traded me to Houston Rockets, and I got released like literally in like less than 5 minutes. And then after that, I never played basketball ever again. That was it.
Enes, let's speak in hypotheticals to some degree. If I were your teammate, if I were your friend, here's what I would have said to you. This is Stephen A. Smith talking to you. This is what I would have said to you. I'd have said, "Enes, you got so much stuff to say. It's so much more important. And the vision is so much bigger than this moment. Are you sure that if China is banning Celtics games?" Because in the world of business, you know this just as well as I do. It's literally as simple as that. If China makes a decision to ban NBA games, okay? If Turkey makes a decision to ban NBA games and the NBA is trying to continue globalizing its brand the way that it has, you are asking yourself every day, no matter what battles you fight, which battle is worth it, because you can't fight every battle when you're trying to win the war, figuratively speaking, which is something you would be far more knowledgeable than me. Let's get that straight right now. If somebody had said that to you, what would you have said then compared to what you would say now that you have felt the effects of what you would term as banishment? What would you say?
You know, I was having this hearing in D.C. and I, you know, in front of me, there was like tons of congressmen on both parties. So they were asking me questions about obviously Turkey, China, Iran, Russia, and many other ones. And they were asking me about, obviously, me losing my career because of China. I stopped them for a second. I was like, "I just have one question. How can the biggest dictatorship in the world can control 100% American-made organization like the NBA and fire a U.S. a citizen?" They looked around and they couldn't say anything. And one of them got up and said, "We have no answer for you." I mean, people need to understand, while we are comfortably living in this country, right? I mean, we have a lot of problems that are obviously happening too. Making millions of dollars, living in the most luxurious houses. On the other side of the world, man, people are losing their loved ones, losing their lives, and losing their homes. We're talking about 3 million innocent people are in concentration camp waiting for help, you know? And unfortunately, none of the athletes or, you know, celebrities or anyone is willing to come out and say something, because they know they can lose their contracts, they can lose their sponsorships or whatever. So I understand it was the biggest monster. And I think that what gives me so much courage, it was when I started to talk about back in 2022 about, you know, China, Daryl Morey called me. And he said, listen, man, I'm just going to be honest with you. When I tweeted that thing called Stand With Hong Kong, you know, they pressured me so much. They made me took my tweet down. They made me apologize. They made me say some of the things that I didn't want to say. You don't say it. You keep doing what you're doing, because no other athlete ever will come out and say the things that you're saying. So I cannot support you out loud, but I'm praying for you. So after hearing that, I was like, whatever it takes, man, I'm just going to go out there and just put everything out there. My teammates really supported me. I remember it was Jaylen Brown, Taco Fall, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and many other ones. We had so many conversations in our locker room. They said, dude, like, explain to us, what are you trying to do? I was like, listen, this is what I'm trying to do. This is nothing about politics. I just want to be the voice of all those innocent people out there. I even asked many of them to, like, you know, like, let's just join. They said, listen, man, we care about you. I think what you're doing is so inspirational, so brave, but we cannot join you. I was like, why? They said, well, we have shoe deals, endorsement deals. We have jersey sales. I asked them one simple question, Steve. Put yourself in their shoes. If your mother, if your sister, if your parents was in those concentration camps getting tortured every day, would you still pick money and business over your values, morals, and principles? They usually turn around and left the locker room. So I think that showed me a lot.
But again, it still comes back to the same question that I asked you before. You know this. You're 33 years of age. You're a grown man on this earth. You're obviously a conscientious observer. You're far more than that. You're an activist. Your heart is clearly in the right place. You don't deserve to be vilified or excoriated for that. You should be applauded for that and having more of courage than most of us would ever dream to have. That's true. But there is also the other side of it, of being able to truly affect change, to assist in getting things done, as opposed to just bringing attention to it. I guess what I'm asking is that, knowing how smart you are, knowing how conscientious you are, and knowing that everybody ain't going to be you, that most people ain't going to be you, we all make a decision not to go away from a subject, what have you, but this particular battle to fight, I might not want to fight that one. I might want to fight this one. You speaking on the issue is one thing. You wearing shoes that says Free Tibet, which exacerbated China, which forced them to engage in banishment. One could easily argue that had those sneakers not been worn, you might not be in this situation today, and you still would be speaking out about stuff if you just hadn't worn those sneakers. Have you thought about that at all? And if so, what comes to your mind? That's what I'm asking.
Of course I did. Obviously, you know, if I didn't wear those shoes, if I stay quiet, and if I only talk about Turkey, NBA really... Actually, NBA was a huge supporter of mine when I was talking about the problems that are happening in Turkey, because they don't make a lot of money in Turkey. People always think that I only speak up about, but we actually bring a lot of changes. I'll just tell you one thing, that a big change. So there are I believe, 82, 83 big companies that use slave labor, right? So we passed this bill in Congress and the Senate, and President Biden signed it. If you're a company, if you have anything to do with the slave labor, you're not allowed to step into America. That is going to cost companies billions of dollars. The name of the bill is Uyghur Force Prevention Act. So if any of our viewers, you know, wanted to check it out. So it passed it. And now all the companies are started to move out of the Xinjiang area. That's itself is a billions of dollars of operation. So I understand, yes, if I were to play another 4 or 5 years, of course, my voice would be so much bigger, but I just couldn't be silent, man. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't be silent.
You on the record, because you brought up China and stuff like that, and obviously there's big brouhaha when mm-hmm. you called out LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
You've had several stars mm-hmm. in the NBA that were your teammates. You've had several, you know, a lot of people in the NBA know you. Obviously, even though they didn't want to step forward publicly or whatever, you articulated that privately. They were very supportive of you, had a lot of respect for you and your position, et cetera, et cetera. Why him? And why pretty much only him as opposed to an abundance of others that one would say you could have called out?
I mean, if you're talking about him, it's not that I pick on LeBron James personally. I actually respect his talent and think everything he's accomplished on the court. But when you become one of the most powerful and influential athletes in the world, I think you also carry a responsibility that goes beyond basketball. I mean, obviously, everybody knows that LeBron has a massive platform. And when he speaks, millions listen. So my issue is not with him as a person. It's with the silence and selective activism. He speaks out about injustice here in America, which is amazing and great and needed. But when it comes to human rights violations, places like China, where the NBA makes billions of dollars, he says nothing, or worse, defends the system that enables that oppression. So for me, that's not about hate. Like, people always get it wrong. It's not about hate. That's about consistency and courage. And so you cannot call yourself an advocate for justice only when it's convenient and profitable. So, I mean, I have sacrificed my career, my citizenship, even my family's relationship, so to stand up for what I believe in. So when I speak about LeBron, I'm speaking about the responsibility that all of us have with the platform.
But Enos, respectfully, I can't, listen, I have to come to his defense in this regard, in this sense. Mm-hmm. He's not the only one that could do more. I could do more. Other athletes could do more. So many human beings could do more. The human race should do more. Politicians should do more. Business leaders should do more. There's a whole bunch of people who should do more. That's number one. Number two, you know, everybody can't be Enos Kanter. Like, you're on the record, Enos Kanter Freedom. You're on the record saying something that most people wouldn't say. When I asked you about the potential effect that it would have on your own parents, you said, hey, you know what? They want me to do what's right. They're not going to side with me if I take a political position. But as long as I stick to human rights, this is how it's going to be. And this is how I'm going to be, because there is a greater world, and there's a greater world to take into consideration, not just them. Even though they're just two people, most people would say, that's my mom. That's my dad. There's nothing on the planet that's coming before them. All I'm saying is the difference in your feelings is passionate and fervent that you feel about this. You are an anomaly. You do stand in rarefied air in terms of the sacrifices that you're willing to make compared to other people. So how you may have expressed yourself about LeBron can pretty much apply to practically all of us compared to you. That's what I'm saying. You don't think that that's a bit harsh to look at LeBron that way, as opposed to all of us who could be guilty of the same things that you were pointing out about him?
I actually did call out so many. Like, when we were in the locker room, I mean, you can actually, like, even ask him if you want. I did call out Jason Tatum. I did call out, you know, Jaylen Brown. And when we actually played, I mean, obviously, everybody, and I call out Kevin Durant all the time, Stephen Curry. So yes, when you look back, obviously, LeBron is the face of the league. Obviously, LeBron doesn't have to talk about China, and no one forced anyone to speak, right? But when you brand yourself as a social justice leader, when you build an image and a business empire on standing up against oppression, then you're choosing to hold on to that torch. So once you make that choice, you cannot pick and choose which injustices matter. And obviously, LeBron has powerful partnership in China through, you know, Nike and NBA. So those same systems rely on, you know, labor and censorship that silenced millions. So it's not about forcing them to speak. It's about asking for moral consistency. So I know that I don't want to, I have never said in my life, I want to educate this or that athlete, because everybody knows that their shoes, their this and that is being made by, you know, slave kids back in China. And also, like, I don't expect perfection, but I do expect honesty. So if someone's platform reaches hundreds of millions and they profit from places where they, where people are literally enslaved and silenced, is not neutral, it's a choice.
One of the things that I point to, Enes, and we're talking to Enes Cancer Freedom right here, the author of the new book, In the Name of Freedom, A Political Dissident's Fight for Human Rights in the NBA and Around the World. Simon & Schuster book, New York Times bestseller, available right now. You see it right there. We're talking to the author himself, Enes Cancer Freedom, right here with Stephen A. What you said just now, one of the things that I've lamented, Enes, is when individuals are held more accountable than governments throughout this world. They're allowed to do business with one another all the time, make money, you understand, funnel money, revenue for the economy and stuff like that. But the individuals ain't allowed to do it themselves. I wonder how much do you pay attention to that portion of it all? It's one thing to look at an individual and say they should do more, but nations throughout this world should do better and should do more. And clearly that's not being the case. So the fight against it, while it will continue because somebody like you is not going to fade from it, it almost seems like an endless battle. It will continue into perpetuity because when we talk about the souls of nations, every single place we turn, no matter what unethical tendencies we could attach to ourselves as individuals, it's nothing compared to what we can attach to various governments throughout various parts of the world. What are your thoughts about that?
No, of course. I mean, it disgusts me when I see our government with any president or any other, you know, Western countries are doing some kind of deal with any dictatorship, you know? I understand, you know, the relationship between countries are very, very important. But that means that you're giving them a chance to breathe. So it disgusts me when I see any American, you know, president or whoever shaking hands with, you know, the leaders like, you know, the Xi Jinping, the Chinese dictator or Putin or Khomeini or whoever, you know. So it disgusts me. So I feel like, yes, of course, it does start with the government level. But I feel like, especially athletes, man, we have an enormous reach, and there are millions of kids out there watching us and idolizing us, and they want to be like us, right? So I feel like every athlete, every celebrity, I feel like they have a purpose and they have a duty to do for our society. So that's why I care about these celebrities a lot, or especially athletes, because they can make the biggest change. If we want to have a better and brighter future, somehow we have to educate, enlighten, and inspire the next generation. And no government is going to do that, but athletes, especially, I mean, about athletes, you know? It gives me so much hope when I see LeBron opens up a school, when I see any players that stands up for what they believe in America, talks about the problems we're having here. Why? Because you're educating the youth, you're educating our society. So that's why, yes, it does start with the government level, but I feel like especially athletes have a very important duty to do.
Aren't you asking them to be you?
What do you mean?
Meaning be like you. In other words, it almost feels as if you wouldn't be satisfied unless they adopted your mentality, your bravery, your willingness to risk it all per se, for the greater good. What do you say to somebody that asks that question?
I will just say, stand up for things that are bigger than yourself. I understand it's tough, but especially around this time, it's hard for them, for any athlete, to pick their morals over their business. I remember, like, before the season ends, all these players, before they go to their vacation with their family members, they were talking about the trip that they're going to take. They're going to take to China, and I'm like, guys, aren't you like tired? You're gonna take a. They're like, no. We gotta make our money first, which I understand, I respect, but like, come on, man. You know, you're signing a lifetime contract with some of the companies out there, like Nike, and they're telling you billions of dollars to talk about the problems that are happening in America, but stay silent outside of America. That hurts my heart, you know? So I just feel like they need to stand up for things that are bigger than themselves.
A few more questions before I let you get on out of here. You became a U.S. citizen in 2021?
Yes.
How are you feeling about this country as a U.S. citizen right now?
I mean, when I became an American citizen, it was definitely one of the most proudest moments in my life. Obviously, I couldn't even travel outside of America for 6 years because I was a green card holder and my name was on Interpol. So when I became a citizen, that moment was just a very proud moment. But now when I look at our country, it's the early steps of Turkey. Turkey was democratic and was a democracy once, but it changed in a heartbeat. When I talk to people in America, you know, people both sides, I mean, they literally hated each other. And I remember I went to one of my friend's house, and he had a gun collection. He had guns like all over his wall. And I'm like, are you a gun collector? I'm like, no, buddy. I'm getting ready for a civil war. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, don't you watch any TV? So even with the media, you get on the news, one side is attacking the one side, the other side is attacking the other side. But people need to understand, man, we only have one America. We have to find a solution to come together and fight as one against those dictatorships out there. If America falls, I don't want to even think about a country. I don't want to even think about a world that is being run by the Chinese government, because if America falls, the next on the line is a Chinese government. So America, when I look at it, it's not looking any good. And we got to come up with ways to just, you know, come as one.
You've publicly stated your desire to seek public office once you've been a U.S. Mm-hmm. citizen for at least 7 years, as required by law. I want to know if that's still the case, if you do plan on running for office down the line, and if so, where?
Good question. So, I mean, being an activist is good, but just like you said, it's so hard to make any kind of real change. If you want to make a real change, you have to be in D.C. So it's too early for me right now, because I know once I if I get into politics right now, even if I can get into politics, I wouldn't, because I will lose 50% of the country. You know, I think once the time comes, once this whole, you know, situation settles down and people can start respecting each other more, I do want to get into politics, because I do care about this country. And I think we need more people in those seats that share America more than themselves. I mean, when I look back, I mean, the team that I played for, especially Oklahoma, gave me a home. Oklahomans opened their arm, gave me a warm welcome from day one. And that was the one thing, that was the one team that, you know, when I look back, I was like, I will die for that team. So I think if it ever happens, I do wanna run in Congress for in Oklahoma, but I think it's still too early for me to even think about those, you know, any kind of political seat.
How are you earning a living?
Well, am I earning a living? Good question.
Yes.
I don't. Every company that has sponsorship with me dropped because of China, because I mean, unfortunately, every company's goal to get on that Chinese market so they can make millions and billions. So every endorsement that I ever had dropped, unfortunately. Obviously, no more MBA money. I do go around and speak a lot. So I do get like a speaking engagement money. But other than that, I don't make any kind of money, because I always make sure that the money that I'm going to get, is it a dirty money or is it a money that is earned? So that's why I don't go out there and jump on every deal.
What's dirty money to you? Give me an example of what you consider or classify as dirty money.
If you're signed with any company, organization, or ever that has something to do with, for example, slave labor, that I consider as a dirty money. That money that is not earned, money that is not made with your sweat, you know? So that's why especially if I'm ever going to run for a political seat, I have to be very careful. If the money I'm going to, you know, make that is hurting people on the other side of the world, I make sure I will stay away from that money.
You talked about running for office, but your focus is on human rights violation. And as important as that is to an American citizen here, you know, they're going to point to what you're going through right now. They're going to point to how you're not earning a living. They're going to say to themselves, we want to earn a living. We want to generate revenue. They're going to want you focusing on the economy. They're going to want you focusing on affordability issues and safety in the streets. They're going to appreciate you and your focus on human rights, and they can't knock you as human beings. But in the same breath, they're going to be like, here in America, that's where our focus lies right now, the economy, revenue for the economy, affordability issues, safety in the streets. How are you going to answer that if you're running for office when your focus is going to be on human rights, but your constituency is going to want you to focus on something else? How are you going to pull that off?
Question. Well, right now, my focus is on human rights because obviously I haven't seen my family, over 11 years now.
Right.
And I do want to stand up for all those innocent people out there. But everybody knows that I am America first. That was the reason that I put this American flag around my neck and wanted to represent this country and not only for one party, one side, for everybody. Mm-hmm. So when the time comes, I'll definitely be more focused on America. But right now, my focus is foreign relations and what can I do to bring my family here so I can see them after not being able to see them for 11 years.
How much money would you estimate you've lost because of your activism?
I mean, I was 29 years old. I mean, for example, if I were to play till 35, I mean, I don't go out. I don't drink. I take care of my body. I could have played another, 6 years. I would make, now the salary cap is going up. So if I even make, $5 million a year or $6 million a year, that's, $30 to $40 million.
So where do you go from here? Have you thought at all about how you're going to earn a living so you can continue to survive and position yourself to ultimately run for office down the line and take on some of the battles that you're taking? How are you going to go about that, my man?
Good question. Well, so right now I do go around and obviously do a lot of speaking engagements, and I'm single. I don't really live a crazy, luxurious life. So I'm okay, feel comfortable and stuff. But right now my focus is on the youth till I run for an office. I mean, obviously, as you know, we have a lot of problems that are happening all over the world, especially the ones in Middle East. So I created this program where I bring Muslims, Jews, and Christian kids together to organize basketball camps all around the world. And after the basketball camps, we sit down and we have conversations. We have conversations about coexistence, our differences. Because what I believe in, it doesn't matter what your background, your skin color, your political view, your ethnicity, we have to leave our differences on the table and trying to find what we have in common, because we only have one world to live. So we need to make this world better together. And I think that's the key word, together. So right now I organize basketball camps around the world, especially between Muslims and Jews, because that's they really divided because of what's happening in the Middle East. And we have these uncomfortable conversation with one and each other. And the most memorable one, I had one basketball camp in Jerusalem where I brought Israelis and Palestinians. I mean, at first, they didn't even pass the ball to each other. But after 2 weeks, they were hugging each other. They were exchanging, numbers, and they were following each other on Instagram. And I do it for free. I do it all of it throughout my foundation. But right now, my focus is on the youth, for sure.
Last question to you. This book, In the name of freedom, a political dissident's fight for human rights in the NBA and around the world by Enes Kanter Freedom himself. This book, your mission to address human rights, what would put you in a better place down the line in terms of looking at what your aim is, what your goals are? What would satisfy you as you move forward with the rest of your life, whether that be as a future politician, future author, future motivator on the lecture circuit? The list goes on and on and on. What would put Enes Kanter Freedom in a place where he says, I like the direction this world is going in. I like what we're doing. I like what I've done. What would that be?
Well, this book wasn't just only a book. It was a message. It was a message to all the youth out there. So in an ideal world, in my dreams, all I care about is people. I want people to have empathy in their heart. That's my ultimate goal, man. Because like I said, again, while we are having the best life in our country, well, you know, on the other side of the world, people are, you know, losing everything. People are war, people are losing their kids and their mother, everything. So in an ideal world, I want people to put themselves in other people's shoes on the other side of the world and care about them. I grew up in Turkey under a dictatorship. And I remember what it means to lose my freedom, democracy in a heartbeat. So if you look at America, I want people to understand what freedom means and how fragile it is and how we shouldn't take it for granted. So that's why I always say freedom is not free. So in an ideal world, I really want youth to understand what freedom means. That's why I wanted to change my last name and put it behind my jersey and carry it everywhere I go. So I can inspire those kids on basketball arenas, you know? So we only have one America. We only have one world. I just hope that, you know, one day we can come together despite our political views or whoever we are and just see ourselves as human beings. Yeah. That is my goal, empathy and sympathy.
Last thing, your mom, your dad, your sister, everybody's okay, to your knowledge?
They're okay for now. I mean, I haven't seen them for, 11 years now.
Yes.
But my brother plays basketball in Korea, so I do talk to him and see how my family's doing and stuff. But I know I'm going to see them one day, either back in Turkey or up at Abdon Region Falls, or going to bring him to America somehow. But I know it's going to sound crazy, but, you know, there are more important things than my – I don't want to say it to my family, but – thousands of families out there are suffering. Mm-hmm. So until I see my family, I got to make sure that they're okay as well.
I know you haven't seen them, but have you spoken to your parents or your sister?
I haven't spoken to my mom or my dad almost five and a half years now, because they listen to their phones and they track down all the IP numbers. And they couldn't even watch my NBA games because, unfortunately, Turkey banned every team that I played for. So they have to go, they have to download some VPN numbers and watch my games and hide, you know. But I know that they will be proud once I see them.
But do you think folks are listening, meaning the government of Turkey, that they're listening on the phone calls to see what you say, or they're listening to try to locate your whereabouts so they can find you?
I think they're listening to what I'm telling them, because even if I have any kind of contact with them, it's an act of terrorism in Turkish government's eyes, so they can put them in jail. So for that reason, my dad and my mom especially just don't want to pick up the phone and answer, because they will be in even bigger trouble than they are right now. So that's the situation you have to live with.
So if your mother or father picked up the phone to answer a phone call from their son, mm-hmm. it is labeled and deemed an act of terrorism by the Turkish mm-hmm. government, which could lead to their incarceration.
I have 12 arrest warrants for me in Turkey, and I'm now only allowed to travel to 29 countries. And I actually have when I had a conversation with the State Department and also FBI, this is actually on the internet. There was so much death threats when I was playing for Portland. I was still in a home. they said, you have to move to a hotel room. So now when I was at the hotel room, they came to my hotel. When I was at the road game, the FBI came to my hotel room and they set up this thing called panic button. They said, whenever you feel uncomfortable, push that button. We'll be there in 2-3 minutes. It's tough, man. I mean, losing your career, losing $30-40 million, not being able to see your family for 11 years, have to live with a panic button, bounty on your head. It's tough. But I know one day it is going to be worth it.
He and his cancer freedom. All the best to you, my man. It's been a long time since I saw you and spoke to you, man, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I applaud your bravery, my brother. Keep your head up. All the best to you. You take care of yourself, all right?
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
All right. One and only, Enes Kanter, author of In the Name of Freedom, A Political Dissident's Fight for Human Rights in the NBA and Around the World. It's available now wherever you buy your books.